My name's Mark, and I'm an alcoholic. Say, this box on it, it says a newcomer asks, and we put it in the back of the room every day, along with some 3x5 cards and some pencils. We ask the people write down questions they might have about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, put them in this box. We select a question every week to be answered using AA-approved literature and our own panel of experts. This week's question is, now that I'm in recovery, is it normal to be scared to go home after recovery into society after so many months in recovery? There's some considerations coming out of recovery house, which is a very isolated environment that we used to refer to as the cocoon, as opposed to the world of reality. Some of these considerations are practical, like what's your living situation going to be? Are you going to go back home? Are you going to be in a sober living environment? That's one issue that might cause some fear. Also, what about a job or a car or family issues or legal problems? These are all considerations that may cause you to have some fear coming out of that recovery house. There's also some AA concerns that you might have. Like, when you're coming out of the recovery house, are you going to have to set up an outpatient program? You're going to have to get a sponsor, start working the steps, get a meeting schedule put together. Consider doing 90 meetings in 90 days. There's a lot of things that you may be afraid of when you're in recovery that you have to deal with when you get on the outside. The question is it normal to be scared about these things? Hell yeah. Because if you're not scared about those things, you're probably not real serious about your recovery. So it's absolutely normal to be scared. But the saying is, if you're scared, then do it scared, but just do it. So yeah, it's normal. And that's all I got on that. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is now time for our featured speaker of the evening. This is brought to you by the Valley Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, the undefeated, undisputed king of speaker meetings. This event is brought to you for your sobriety pleasure, and now, let's get ready for recovery. Our speaker has been a sober member since 4/16 of 89 in Oildale. He has been continually in service as a secretary, treasurer, chairperson of Oildale, H&I representative and sponsor. And now, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, from the streets of Bakersfield, Steve C.
My name is Steve, and I'm an alcoholic. Oildale's my home group. Sunday morning's my home meeting. And as you said, I've been sober since April 16th, 1989. I'm waiting for Muhammad Ali to show up any minute now, and this, you know, we're gonna have a rumble in the jungle. I don't need any help to stroke my ego. That's not a good thing for me to hear, that kind of opening. First of all, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. It really is. I have a few friends in the audience tonight that came along just to keep me honest. So I got to tell the truth tonight, because so one of them has known me for a considerable amount of time. We went to high school together. We did some drinking together, a little bit of partying. He was pretty much a lightweight. And that's your Mike Kay here. He and I went to the same high school for about 8-10 years. I don't know how long it was. It was a while. Anyway, so he knows a lot of my story. He was there, so I'm going to have to keep it pretty honest tonight. But Mike said, I guess I started at the beginning. We should have more birthday people tonight. You know, maybe another 30 or 40 more to cut this time down. I'm like a whole bunch of you, I'm sure. Started drinking at a young age. I came from a family of drinkers. I say drinkers, that's not plural. Singular. My father drank a lot. And my mother bitched about it a lot. And that was a lot of chaos. A lot of fighting, a lot of yelling, a lot of chaos. And as a little boy, I can remember thinking, man, I'm never going to do that. I'm not going to drink. If my dad wouldn't drink, my mom wouldn't bitch, everything would be all right. And then when I was about 12, I guess, I got drunk, and then I knew, you know what, now I know why he drinks, this is good stuff, I enjoy this, and I drank, I started young, and I drank it, not every weekend, but at every opportunity. It was, it's what I thought about, a lot, I was planning on getting drunk. I wouldn't plan on, we call it parties, I plan on getting drunk. And it worked. It helped me get out of this, what I thought was a shy little boy, whatever. It helped me be more social, so I thought. Like I said, it worked for quite a while. I did a lot of drinking in high school. There were too many things I did well in high school. Drinking was one of them. In fact, it may have been the only one. I did that very well. In my yearbook, I can remember I've only one year did I invite anybody write in my book, and that year was filled with nothing but new to class drunk and this and that. And after that, my parents read it; they weren't impressed at all. So nobody signed my yearbook. But at an early age, I was known as, I was a falling down drunk. I wasn't must have a little drinky poo and talk. I want to get drunk and be somebody, And I want to be somewhere other than where I'm at. And I want to be with her instead of her and whatever. I just, no matter where I was, I didn't want to be there. I was uncomfortable in my own skin. It worked. It worked. It worked for quite a while. It worked probably maybe in my early 20s, maybe. And it got where it was working occasionally. I couldn't guarantee it was going to be any fun, and I couldn't guarantee my actions. Sometimes I would be pleasant to be around. Other times I wasn't so pleasant. I was pretty radical as far as my behavior at times. And I was... where people really didn't want to drink with me a whole bunch of times because they just couldn't guarantee my action. I was unpredictable. And it was worse working less and less often. The fun was less and less. But I kept on drinking. I kept going back to the way it used to be. I hope it would become that fun again. I could be bulletproof and have a lot of fun and laugh. And I'm just pretty much an average guy. I went to a trade school in LA and drank a lot down there and got through school, came back to the Valley, got a job in Bakersfield working for an oil service company, when I started working for them, it was pretty much, it wasn't said, but it was understood that there's two things they expected me. One was to drink and work, and that was kind of went hand in hand. I didn't necessarily drink while I worked, but as soon as I was done, we worked or we drank. It's two things I did well: drink and work. And that's worked long hours, drank at every opportunity. In those days, the companies would turn their heads as long as nobody got killed. there was a lot of drinking on the job, a lot of drugs. I didn't do any drugs. You know, I'm the kind of guy that would lay in the gutter and look down on the world. I would, you know, maybe a pee in my pants, but I certainly wasn't going to do any drugs. That's just the kind of guy I was, you know. And drugs scared me, scared the crap out of me. I ran with some people that did drugs, and a little voice in me, I didn't realize at the time, that said, Steve, you don't need to do that shit. You may really like it, and you're having a hard time handling this. So I didn't do any drugs. I was pretty much just a drinker. I did some of the stuff we talked about, or switching from whiskey to beer to brandy and whatever. By the time I was about 21, I gave up hard liquor. I can't drink like a gentleman. I cannot drink whiskey, tequila, any of that. I can drink beer all right, but I just can't drink the hard liquor. And like I said, I went to work for this company. I was fairly, I moved up the ladder. The truth is, I was looking around and my friends were getting married and having kids, my life would be better if I was married and had a kid. So I got married and had a kid. And my life didn't get any better. They weren't the answer. They weren't the answer. I had a wife that I didn't think of it at the time, but she put up a lot of crap. But I did what I thought men do. I worked. I brought the check home. I worked a lot and I drank a lot. Here's the check. You know, she pretty much ran the finances. I just wanted enough to keep me in beer and have some spending money in my pocket. And we did, on paper, it was looking good. I've always been one of those people that could keep my life together to the point where I was never unemployed. Always worked. In high school, I worked. Always worked. And that's what I thought. I never saw what real life, what a real husband and wife do, what real families do. I thought you drank and you worked, you give your wife the money, she took care of the house, and I drank and I worked. And I'd come home when the day was over. It might be a 20-hour day, it might be 2 days. You know, we worked a lot of hours. And I thought I was a good guy. You know, I thought I was a good guy. I drank a little bit, but just to relax. And when I drank and I worked. After a while, we had another little boy, so I'm now with these two little boys. My life is looking good on paper. I'm moving up the ladder with the company I'm with, and the truth is, it's all, and I didn't know that this when I got here. I had to do the steps, and I've done them many a time. But the truth is, I was a self-centered son of a bitch. I'd love to dress it up. The truth is, I was a self-centered son of a bitch. All I thought about was me and my job, and that's who I was. Just to inflate my ego. If I got a promotion, if I got a raise, that's who I was. The better I moved up the ladder, the higher I moved up the ladder, the better I was. I had nothing else. I mean, that's, you go with your strengths. Strength and working's all I got. And I drugged my wife through a lot of stuff. I got a wild hair and I went overseas and worked for a year. And with a promise of a promotion, I took my family to Greece, to a country that she'd never been out of California probably. And here, to get two little babies in diapers and take her to a strange country through a chain of events, we ended up in this apartment. I'm there about a week and say, okay, I'll see you later. I'm gonna go to work. and I'm working in Libya, and I leave her. I just leave her with two little babies, and she wasn't a happy camper. In a strange company, country, but it was more important for me to be on the job, to try and impress who I'm working with and for, and at any cost. Nothing would stand in my way of what I thought would be an achievement or drinking. Nothing. Not my kids, not my wife. Nothing stood between me and the drinking. And me and my ego. My ego. And we did that for a few years and came back to Bakersfield, and about... we've been home a while, and this lady, like I said, she put up with a lot. And anyway, the marriage fell apart, came home one day, and she said, "I'm leaving." I can, okay, that's fine. My boys are staying. She said, okay. And so she left, and my two, here I am. With my two little boys. And it's time to drink. How could she leave me after all I've done to her? How could she leave me? And poor me. And so it's me with these two little boys. And I can do that for a few years. I thought I was a good dad. I could do the cooking and the cleaning, and I worked and I drank and I cooked and I drank and I worked and after a while though, it was time to find another her because I needed some help. I found another young lady again on paper this even looked better. I had struck it. The gold mine here, because she was a lot smarter than I was. She had a better job than I did. She had two sons that were all around, just all American boys, just straight A's, great athletes, no trouble. On paper, looked great, it really did. We got married, and let me back up a little bit. I gotta get sober here pretty quick. Before we got married, we had dated 6-8 months, and after about 6-8 months, she said, "I'm not gonna date you anymore unless you do something about your drinking." And drink? I'm not drinking that much. I toned it down considerable. And she said, "No, you're drinking too much." And said, "I'm not gonna date you. This is not going anywhere unless you do something about your drinking." And then a choice between her and a drink, and the drink went out. Just see you later. And after a couple of weeks, I thought it over, and I got horny and called her and said, "Okay, I'd love to tell you something else, And I called her and said, "Okay, what's the terms?" And so we started going to some counseling, and the counselor knew a lot more about me than I did. The counselor asked me some questions, and I drink occasionally, and I think she was smart enough to know if I said a six-pack, you multiply that by three. And anyway, she was way ahead of me, and she said, "Well, how about you guys, Steve, what would you guys want to go out on dates and this and that? What would you be comfortable with drinking? We're gonna settle this right here before we go out." So okay, I don't remember the number I picked. I don't know if it was 6, 12, 14. I don't remember. But everybody agreed to it. So then we went out the next weekend with our friends and whatever number it was that I agreed to drink and then stop, I hit it in the first 20 minutes, I'm ready to go home. And they're ready to continue the evening. And we've only been here for an hour, and I drank my quota. I don't remember what my quota was. But I got to pick it, I remember that. And everybody agreed on it. And I suffered. I was a glum lot. And when I suffer, I don't suffer well, and I do not suffer alone. I will make sure everybody around me is miserable. And so we would, you know, I'd like to, after a few hours out, say, okay, I'm ready to go home. I'm through drinking. And it's like, let's go home. And everybody wants to have fun, and they're drinking like social people do. And I did that for a couple weekends and went back. We went back to this counselor and said, look, I ain't doing the controlled drinking no more. I can do better with no beer or no drinks instead of four and stop or six, whatever the number was. So I had the pleasure of when I heard this read the first time about doing this controlled drinking and the switching, I'd done all that. I'd done controlled drinking. The book talks about controlled drinking. We can do it sometime. It says controlled and enjoyed. I've done controlled drinking. I never enjoyed it. Never. I hated it. I hated you. I hated me. I hated everybody. But I've done some controlled drinking. I do not recommend it if you're an alcoholic of my type. So we got married. I did not drink for about a year and a half. A year and 8 months, whatever. And she was my higher power. And it worked for a while. And she became a woman. And I was a scared little boy. I was scared. My God had become a woman. She couldn't carry me through the day. And that period of time was the worst time of my life as far as being uncomfortable. I hated it. I bounced between suicide and homicide. I knew somebody needed to die, just wasn't sure who. And my wife had convinced me that to go to a psychiatrist and give me a battery of tests and said, well, you're depressed. And this guy's doing the best he can. I mean, he really was. And he said, you need some antidepressants. I took them, and they helped a little bit. The truth is that I was an alcoholic without a drink or a God. I didn't know it. He didn't know it. That's untreated alcoholism. No drink, no God. Ugly, ugly, ugly. Needless to say, on April 16th, and now I've been without a drink for about a year and a half, 18, a long time, without a God, no drink. And April 16th, 1989, was a Sunday night, and there was a 12-pack in an icebox for a long time, and it was cold. And we had a spat. I remember what went on. She went to church. I stayed home with my boys, drank that, went and got some more beer, drank that. She came home. I don't remember what was said. I don't know what happened. I know there was an argument. Next day she packed up and left. And her and her sons, they were out of there. And so here I am with my two sons. And I go to work. And Monday, with all the intentions of coming home and finishing the drunk. I talked to my boss and said, look, I've got some personal problems. I'm going to go home with all the intentions of getting drunk. And I go home, and it's been a long time since I drank. I'm really out of shape. So I pretty much sleep the day away. And next day I go back on Tuesday, and the guy shows up that I had done business with for a while. He's a salesman. And my secretary had told me that he's in the program. We had talked. And she had seen, my secretary had seen me drink before. And she knew, she'd been around Alcoholics Anonymous. She'd been Al-Anon. And she had talked to this particular salesman and said, hey, one of these days, maybe Steve will talk to you and this and that. That day I went and asked him, hey, Al, I might have a little drinking problem. And he kind of grinned like, no shit. And he said, well, meet me in Oildale tonight. 106 Lincoln, be there. 8 o'clock, Tuesday night. I said, okay, I'll be there. And I was late. I was late that evening, as newcomers often are. And I was late, and he had waited for me, and he figured that I wasn't going to show. So at break, he went home, and I showed up. And I sat by the door so I could get out quick, just in case I needed to. And what I heard that night was the language of the heart. What I heard was that people didn't drink one day at a time, and they were laughing. They were enjoying life. And that was a rare combination for me. I had not drank, but there was no joy in it. No joy at all. So I was kind of that hooked right then, that how do you not drink one day at a time, and you laugh and you enjoy life? And I got to talking with Al, and eventually asked him to be my sponsor, and he took me through the steps. And he was 100% AA. There was no, he passed on what was so freely given to him. This is what has worked for me. And you know, he was my sponsor for, 18, 19 years, I guess. He died a few years ago of cancer. Since then, and with Al, I went through the steps maybe two or three times. And I've been through them again with my new sponsor a couple times. And my life has got beyond my wildest dreams. If you're new tonight and you're thinking, that guy's full of shit. Yeah, that's what I used to think. I have become the guy I used to make fun of. You have to believe me on this, that I would look at bozos like me and think, that is a loser. Now, I'm not sure what a winner was, but I would look at guys like me and go, what a loser. Nobody can enjoy life that much. You can't have that much fun without drinking and whatever. But I have found, by working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and being active in Alcoholics Anonymous, I do more today to stay sober than I probably on a weekly basis than I did the first 5 years. I go to three, four meetings a week. I have lunch with my sponsor on Tuesdays normally. I sponsor people. I have a sponsor that has a sponsor that has a sponsor that has a sponsor. I sit in Oildale on certain Saturdays or Sundays, and there may be six generations of sponsors in there. That's pretty neat. It shows that it works. It's reassuring to me to know that it's passed on from one alcoholic talking to another, and it does work. If you work it. It is. It's an amazing journey. I have no regrets. I worked on that particular job for about 23 years in the oil patch, and I decided that it was time to move on, and I left that job and went into business for myself. And it wasn't that scary. It really wasn't, because I trusted God. You know, it just really wasn't. I left a career of 23 years and said, okay, let's go try something else, completely different. I knew it'd be all right. And hell or high water, it'd be all right. If I didn't drink, you know, and I did continue to do the things that I was doing, was going to meetings and sponsor, that it was going to be all right. You know, if you're new, please keep coming back. We need you. And get a sponsor and work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and get active. I tell my people, that the guys I sponsor, I really don't. Most of the guys I sponsor, I don't really care what they think or feel. Sorry, I don't care. What I do care about is what you do. Are you showing up early? Are you setting up the chairs? Are you shaking hands? Are you making coffee? Are you the secretary? Are you staying late and washing dishes? What are you doing? What step are you doing? You know, not what you think, not what you feel. It's all good stuff. I'll listen. At times I don't have much compassion. I don't. It's what you're doing. What are you doing? I'm out of gas. Very first question. Any questions? Anybody going to say, why did you invite that bozo? Any questions? Yeah. How did I find? Just like it says. You know, that those 12 steps are the blueprint, the directions. That's the way it worked for me. That's the way it's worked for, I'm guessing, 90% of the people in here. I believe God can do anything he wants. Bill Wilson came down and tapped him on the forehead and said, you've got your spiritual awakening. And I'm sure it can happen today. But for me, it was more of the educational variety. A slow, gradual process of working the steps. And slowly, ever so slowly, becoming a different person. Becoming that man that came in here that showed you anger. When the truth was, having worked the steps, I found out I wasn't angry. I was a scared little boy. But I don't do fear. I do anger. I want to show you anger. I want to show you I'm a badass. But I never was. I was a scared little boy. The steps. Yes, sir. I don't know if there's any hard set rules. I mean, there aren't any rules here anyway. But I don't know about you have to do it every year. I think Al, my sponsor, Mike, can confirm this or deny it or whatever. I don't think Al did steps originally, and I think he probably waited maybe 18 years before he did them again. You know, as far as on paper with a sponsor. But I don't know if I was to tell you. I mean, I tried not to run my life. I certainly can't run yours. But I did the steps within maybe 6, 8, 9 months. The first time, maybe I waited 3 years. The second time, I don't think when it was time to do them again, I was well aware of it because the pain level, the uncomfortable. Yeah, I was getting uncomfortable for a certain reason. And maybe I did the steps just on a particular item. Maybe, in fact, I did. Just the steps, nothing but female relationships. After I'd done the steps in general, I went back, and because I was really struggling with female relationships. They're all relationships, especially female. But I didn't have the tools to make it work. I didn't have the tools to make it work, you know. So I don't know if there's any set rules. I know you need to do them once. I don't know about you. I needed to do them at least once, and since then I've probably done them like the half a dozen times, maybe more. I've done them with these three guys right here 2 or 3 times. We had a men's step study. You know, and you're worried about something that doesn't need to be worried about. If I believe the first 3 steps and God's in charge, if it's time, he'll let me know. He'll let me know. If I got a sponsor, he'll let me know. He says, Steve, you're crazy as hell. Why don't you rework the steps here in this particular area of your life or whatever. You heard what? I'd work them as soon as possible, you know, work them as soon as possible and get involved. And if you get to the point where somebody has what you want or you have what they want, they'll ask you, if you really want to know how to do the steps, sponsor somebody. I mean, have you done them first? So when you're going through the steps with somebody, it's an amazing. No, I'm saying you need to do them, and you need to find a higher power. That's all the steps. That's what the steps are for, is to help you find this higher power, a higher power, your higher power. You know, I've heard it said, yeah, a step a year. No, I do them quick. You know, I don't believe you gotta wait 60 days, 90, I don't know. Man, how soon do you want to start saving your life? Yeah. Alcoholics are a strange breed. Just one quick thing, just because I can, and we got some time. Strange breed of cat, that's for sure. Our logic is absolutely bizarre. Bizarre is a fair word. I was going into the TAP prison. I was doing it once a week. Done, did it for years and years and years. Had a guy in there. A lot of them have been there, in and out. Now I got sober in AA and stopped going to meetings, stopped talking to my sponsor, and I'm right back in. Had a guy sitting there, and he's fired up, you know. I'm fired up. I'm going to get out in a few days, and I'm going to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, get me a sponsor, work the steps, all this. Then a couple weeks later, he's nah, maybe, you know, I need to spend some time with my family. You know? I need to spend some time with my family. And I said, well, you know, how far are you from a meeting? Oh, half a mile, 2 miles, whatever. How long's the meeting? An hour? It's in the Santa Barbara area, somewhere over in there. Hour? So I said, 2 hours out of your day will keep you out of here. Keep you out of this place. 2 hours out of your day. How long you been down? How long you been in here? Well, since he was 10 or 12, he's blown, you know, 6 or 8, 10 years of his life in places like this. And you're away from your family 24/7. How many meetings is that? How many 2-hour periods is that? You're afraid to be away from your family to keep you out of here when you've been away from years? Now, he can justify this thinking in his head. It wouldn't surprise me tonight if he was sitting somewhere else on somebody on their dime. You know, it's a crazy, crazy thing. My head will lie to me. A little twisted. The truth is, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I need you guys. I need to go to meetings. I need everything I needed in the first 24 hours. I still need it, if not more. You know, coming up here, that's no problem. There's a little insurance in the bank here. Keep me sober. I don't know if any of you will get sober, but I'll leave sober. And we'll drive home tonight and have a little meeting on the way home. And we'll all end up being sober. You know. Anything else? It's time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.